This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful, and it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout, and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today. You'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 279.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we lament the fact that the Staples Center in Los Angeles is going to be renamed Crypto.com, which for a brief moment made me feel like nothing was real. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, and don't worry, right after I worried that nothing was real, I luxuriated in a nice cup of instant oatmeal, and then I was fine. So everyone should try that whenever they have like an existential crisis. Today, oh my gosh, I'm so excited by today's panel. So, you know her, you love her. She's been on the show, just providing her brilliance and sharp wit so many times. You've maybe even already downloaded her album, So You Just Out Here, because she is a fine comedian on the circuit today. And if you haven't, please go get So You Just Out Here. It is the one and only Shalewa Sharp. Hey, Shalewa.
Hello. How you doing?
Oh, my God. I'm so much better now that you're here. We are also joined for the first time, but I warned him it's probably not his last, because I can already tell that he's super delightful. He is the New York Times bestselling author of the book House Fires, which just looks remarkable. But you might know him as just an internet content creator extraordinaire. He does so much. It is the one and only Connor Franta. Hey, Connor.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here.
Oh my gosh. Well, folks, let's just get into it with topic number one. So there's a new university brewing. It's going to be called the University of Austin, and it's being birthed because they say mainstream academia suppresses, they as in the founders, say that mainstream academia suppresses intellectual dissent. And they claim to be alarmed by, quote, the illiberalism and censoriousness prevalent in America's most prestigious universities. Its founders include, or I don't know if their founders are on the advisory board, but these people include Barry Weiss, Neil Ferguson, Barry Weiss, who you might know is the former opinion editor at the Times, Neil Ferguson from the Hoover Institution, Heather Hang, an evolutionary biologist, Joe Lonsdale, a technology entrepreneur. A couple of those names are a little, I don't know, triggering to some. But let's get
get back to the central conceit of why the university is being founded, this claim that censoriousness is prevalent, do you find that in American universities? What's your feeling about what universities are doing these days, Shalewa?
Well, I dropped out of college in 1991, so okay. My issues are probably more of like diversify the cereal choices. We can't all just live on Captain Crunch.
Right. No, agreed. Yeah. Yeah.
It feels a little, I have not seen the movie PCU, but it feels like that where it's just, let's make a school, everyone. Do you know what I mean? A little clubhousey. And right. Austin mm-hmm. feels like the right place to do it because there are plenty of other colleges and it's a party town. So why not be contrary over drinks?
Well, Shalewa, you're around a lot of comedians. And a question that I get when I perform at colleges and universities, mm-hmm. and I get this like truly, they'll announce me, you know, performing at a school and then the school newspaper will interview me, right? Mm-hmm. And invariably I get the question, you know, so Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock don't do colleges and universities anymore. What do you think of that? So that's my question to you, Shalewa. What do you mm-hmm. think of that?
I think that is their right as Americans. I think I kind of understand why they don't. Colleges are weirdly precious, right?
They're very precious like
about their cargo, aka their students. And they want to be careful as they're sending them out into the world. But I mean, they literally are just throwing them out after graduation, giving them like a summer and then going, hey, do you want to like give us some money? So it's an odd kind of way to be careful about the students. But it's also a time where you are learning a lot about just how the world works. And I can see being established, being older, wanting to talk about what you want to talk about, not worrying about this precious cargo.
Connor, what did you think when you heard the news? Because the thing is, this University of Austin got a lot of attention when they announced it. Again, because I think people like Barry Weiss and Neil Ferguson, who weirdly I met in Mexico City, but it's, you know, they are behind it and they're like pretty divisive figures. So what was your take? I mean, I guess on the controversy or just on the formation of the college itself?
I mean, I'm also someone that barely has an opinion on college purely because I dropped out in 2013. So
okay, so they never fixed any of those problems.
Yeah, I went to pursue a magical career in online creation. Oops. Wow, that's exactly
what. How much time did you do before you dropped out?
I did 2 years, to be fair. And to be fair, I also didn't dislike my experience. I had decent grades and everything. I just, it was like opportunity met me and I got, I had my two paths to pick.
Right.
Which one am I going to pick?
So did you feel in those 2 years that, I guess the issue of that colleges are censorious and you can't have a diversity of that. Did you feel that in 2013 before you dropped out or what did your school feel like?
I think I had sort of an awakening after I left college, which a lot of people do. Like we mentioned, you're not fully developed as a person when you're 18 to 21, 22. You're kind of just beginning your journey in that sense.
Right.
So I feel like when I left and I moved to a bigger city and I met a more diverse group of people and, you know, really threw myself into the reality of this world, that's when I started feeling like I was seeing the world for what it truly was. So in college, in my, you know, small private school in the Midwest, it did feel censored, even if they weren't trying to be. It was like, this isn't depicting reality. We aren't talking about what's really going on. So I see why they would want to create a university like this, but I don't know if it's going to work.
Right. I mean, it's weird to me. Okay, as someone who did go to college and then many other degrees, and I guess what? Like nearly every episode, it comes up. But I was looking up to see. When I was at school, we had something called the Cornell Review, which was a conservative newspaper. And I was sort of like, oh, I wonder if the Cornell Review is still alive because it's, in this particular climate, it might be hard to run a conservative newspaper. At the time, it's not like they were beloved when I went to school, but they were, they had a nice core group. They walked amongst us. They were invited to our parties.
Like vampires.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I mean, it's possible I even made out with someone who wrote for the Cornell Review. I'm just saying. It is a possibility. I cannot confirm nor deny. But I looked on the website to see if they're still around. And they are, in fact, still around. Like, basically, nurturing and developing, and I'm not mad at this, nurturing and developing conservative minds in the 18 to 22 year old demographic, mm-hmm. which is great. Like, that's another point of view. So part of the claim that universities, and again, this is a sample set of one Cornell University, but like part of the claim that schools are not open to other forms of opinion felt a little hollow to me. Just by this one Google search, I'm ridiculous for even citing it, but it did feel like, oh, look, they literally just put, had a new piece up today, so this feels like ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. I do also think college is what seems to have happened in college. It used to be that the kids that lived in co-ops with their purple hair and their polyamorous relationships or whatever were like the weird ones, and maybe now they're the more mainstream ones, and so now the weird ones are the ones that are running the Cornell Review. You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm not in college.
That feels cylindrical, though. I feel like that happens every 15 to 20 years. Like, it's just, all right, now the weird ones are in charge and now they're not anymore.
Yeah,
and
look, true.
We popped up again, we rebranded or whatever. Yeah, we're straightening our hair. But it's, I mean, it is odd to still to put forward the idea that schools are nothing but these just liberals running amok. That is not really the case. I think it is a time where people are trying things out, but the idea that if you send your kid to a school, they're absolutely going to end up liberal is not true. I think there are too many schools that I'm like, I'm looking at how everyone just dresses in their off time. Y'all are fairly conservative. Like, no one is.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Just on a surface level. So I also agree that it feels a little like, that premise feels a little sweaty to me, that you have to come up with another school.
I think the other version of the premise is that, do you guys remember the bag of fun that was Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, of the former president of Iran? Mm-hmm. He was coming to New York for the General Assembly, which is a poppin' party in September's. And world leaders come, they do their thing, whatever. And often they'll go around and speak at different universities. So they were at Columbia, one of my other alma maters, and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was invited to speak, and a bunch of people protested the decision to ask him to speak. But then anyways, he spoke. And I thought two things were great. One, that Columbia University invited this dude who at the time was in so much, he controlled a lot of the, fear around international diplomacy with Iran. And it seemed like an important person to hear speak. And then the other thing that I was really happy about is that the university created a space for people to protest it safely. Mm-hmm. Both of those things can be true, that the thing happens and that people aren't happy about it. And both of those things are great, So that's, I think, a little bit what we see happening. It's almost like I think we all need to refrain how we see speakers being protested as the speaker is being protested, and that's awesome, and still let them speak. And I think a lot more people could come on board. It feels like we're just marketing the dissent incorrectly or something. I don't know. But Connor, you said you didn't think it's going to work. What kind of people do you think this will attract? I mean, why wouldn't this kind of university work?
It just feels like creating a bubble or, you know, an echo chamber where everyone with similar opinions are going to go and they're all going to be stroking each other's egos. Mm-hmm. And, you know, no real world experience is going to be had. Like you said, like you can disagree with someone, but still allow them to speak. And with anything, you listening to their argument only strengthens yours or your side or your opinion by seeing where they're coming from. And that's just also reality. You're going to meet people you disagree with. So if you create sort of this liberal think tank bubble or this isolated island, I don't think that's a healthy depiction of the world around us.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like... You know, it just seems like they're going to attract the same people of political thought. I think the notion, what is it? Who was it? The Socratic notion that people are going to be, you know, standing around in their robes and just having different ideas and arguing and beautifully arguing like that. I don't think is how it's going to go down, because it will end up attracting some of the same people. That said, though, there's something like a founding board and an advisory board, and among, and I'm going to mix up the names, but there's a lot of luminaries. I mean, there's Harvard professors, there's other university deans and chancellors listed on here. David Mamet randomly. I'm talking about this subject with two college dropouts and one weirdly college extremely pro college
super
person.
Fan.
Super fan. And it's funny because we talked about vocational learning. Mike, we talked about vocational learning last week. So this is like an addendum subject. And my main complaint with like my college experience is that there was not enough plumbing classes, because I would have loved to take one of those, right? There should just be some more vocational learning, like just straight up at college. You could get both best of both worlds.
Yeah.
But which is not something that University of Austin is talking about, for the record. They still just want the like your clean hands in a, you know, and beautifully arguing Socratic ideals. But there, you know, it's not like there's a lot of people that are affiliated with this university that I think are, you know, glittering members of, you know, the intellectual elite, people you might love. So it's not, it's also possible that a couple of names like Barry Weiss have narrow cast this effort to make it seem like it's, you know, like it's going to be QAnon you, which I think is also, you know, a stretch or whatever. So I don't know. Shalewa, do you think it's going to, final word, do you think, how do you think this is going to do?
Well, I mean, if it's really just for thinking, what jobs are they getting out of this? Do you know what I mean?
Like, I love that your criticism is a practical one.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, the reason I dropped out of college was because I was like, this costs a lot of money and I'm going here for photography. Let me rethink that. And in the meantime, go fold some shirts somewhere.
Right.
So it feels like this is just an extremely long bubble. We're just really, you know, the kind of people who are already going to populate and work in think tanks, here are their kids going on to do that, because I can't see anyone with any sort of practical looking at things like, I need to get a job out of this because I need to get a job out of this, will go to the school. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're right, they could throw an HVAC or VCR TV repairman set guy in there, you know, but they won't.
By the way, it just to be fair to this as yet undeveloped university, they want the tuition to be less than $30,000 a year and cited the rising cost of universities as one of its problems, in addition to the censoriousness.
Right, but are they going to recruit around people who also need college to be less than $30,000
right.
a year.
That's, I mean, they have a lot of ethical questions confronting them. I think that's a really good question because they had a very easy time getting their first, whatever, $10 million, and now they're mm-hmm. looking for $250 million. So if you've, you know, if you're
if you've
into
got that
it,
somewhere.
Yeah. But it looks like it's kind of easy for them to raise the money. Now the question is, are they really going to get a student body that makes sense? You know what? We're going to take a quick break and hear about our sponsors. Whoomst we love. Is that the right grammar? I learned it in college. And when we come back, we'll talk about other things.
I am the type of person that has subscribed to things, and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app. And I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money. And because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry. Thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we are back and ready for topic number two. So shit is happening. Joe Biden signed an infrastructure bill on Monday. And I've been hearing talk about an infrastructure bill since we were all watching VHS tapes. I mean, this shit has been going on for years and years and years. And get this. This is the fucking crazy thing. I don't even feel like this gets enough attention. It is a bipartisan bill. 18 Republicans in the Senate voted on this. Or wait, was it 13? And I added the 6 from the other. Well, whatever. Many over 10 Republicans. No, I think I have the real number somewhere else, and that's a typo. Ugh, notes.
I think
notes.
It is 13. I think it was 13.
It's 13. You know what? Typo, folks. Typo. 13. 13 Republicans in the Senate, or however many, voted on this. And it's basically revolutionary. I don't feel like we've been popping the Asti Spumanti enough about this bill. Just my quick question is, like, do you feel like this is a big deal? How did the news land in your personal brain transom, Connor?
I mean, I feel like exactly what you said, this has been talked about for so long. That even though, like, even when I read the article that you sent over ahead of time, I was like, Oh, yeah, I thought it was passed a while ago. Oh, yeah, I forgot that it hadn't been officially passed because I thought it was passed because it went through the million stages the U.S. government has to go through to pass anything.
Yeah.
That I'm like, what is it again at this point? Because I know it's changed since the last time I read up on it.
Yes,
but it's just painfully long. So when it was passed, honestly, I was like, woo.
Right. It's like you had pre-gamed, and by the time the actual event came, you were like already done.
100%. Yeah. So like by the time it was out, I'm like, I keep forgetting this is again $1 trillion. Like a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of change, but it's just gone over my head the more I hear about it, sadly, unfortunately.
Shalewa?
I mean, I agree with Connor. I was just like, wait, what? We ain't done this yet? You know, I also am kind of like, when does this kick in? Like, great, we passed it, finally, wonderful. When am I going to see someone on these potholes? Like, what exactly?
Can I give you some good news on that?
Mm, yeah.
Governor Hochul of New York State already announced that they're going to be using part of the money to avoid a price change in the New York City subway, bus, and regional commuter rails. So you're already basically experiencing it because they were going to have to raise our prices and they're not going to.
Well, that will be fantastic news to the new people I'm seeing on the train shooting heroin.
I will only be happy once I can take that fast train from LA to New York.
Right.
That's when I'll be happy.
That's fantastic. That's wonderful.
We have some goddamn trains in this country. That's all I want.
Yeah, I want that too. Absolutely.
Let me tell you guys a few things that are in this bill. And I know that talking about infrastructure isn't sexy, but I think it's sexy. You know what I mean? Infrastructure is sexy. Yeah, you don't know. This is, you know, when you have a toddler and you go to a playground. No, Connor. So what happens? One experience I had very recently was that they completely redid this entire park and playground, and it was like walking into a wonderland. You know, as a parent, I use the parks and playgrounds of New York City aggressively all the time. You know, I utilize my taxpayer privilege of these parks and playgrounds, and I love them, and they're so important to me, and they're so important to my family. And to go into one that has been just completely redone with public funds, and it's better and it's safer, it's just way more awesome, and it's so heavily utilized, so it really should be maintained. That's when infrastructure is fun and joyful. You know what I mean? Is that feeling you get when you walk into a new park with your toddler. Here's what you're going to get in this bill: 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations. There's tens of billions of dollars to improve access to broadband internet and to replace hazardous lead drinking pipes. Guys, because we're still drinking out of lead pipes in some cities. They're going to clear backlogs at the nation's ports. Actually, that money is already being spent, right? The whole supply chain nightmare, like, for example, they made some ports 24 hours. All that stuff is coming from this bill. Tens of billions of dollars are being used to rebuild roads and bridges. That's the thing everybody thinks of, and that is going to happen. They're going to upgrade freight and passenger rail systems. Hey, train between LA and New York. And there's a bunch of money set aside for cleaning up environmental pollution, which I love. The cleanup, not the pollution. We're going to avoid the price change in New York City subways. As an example, that affects, you know, me and Shalewa, just the two of us.
We're the only ones on there.
We're the only one. So I find it very exciting. I do just want to get into the politics of it a little bit because I think this is the part that's crazy. So GOP members who voted for the bill, and as we said, there's 13 in the Senate, I believe. I can't believe I don't have the exact, it is 13. Okay. And they are possibly getting punished. So they're thinking of ways of punishing the people who voted for the bill by stripping them of their committee assignments. So that's one way they're thinking of punishing the people who voted for the bill. And then another way that they're just generally being punished is like by death threats from constituents.
Cute.
Yeah.
just girly things. Love it. So cute.
Wow.
Jesus.
Wow.
What is wrong with people?
here's the crazy thing, too. No one is talking about, they're just talking about, why did you give Democrats a win? Or like the National Review called it political malpractice to have voted for this bill. Except for there's nothing, it's political malpractice, but they're not calling it a public policy malpractice because nobody thinks that we shouldn't fix all of those things, right? Like everybody's like, yeah, dude, like the bridge in my town is about to collapse. Like we need to do something about that. So that's real. So that's not the complaint that anyone in the GOP has. It's literally just about, you know, doing something to give Biden a win. What's going on?
I mean, GOP, grand old party, more like grand old petty, am I right?
Hey, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm so sorry. I fully expect the hook to pull me out of here. I shouldn't still be here.
But that's the level of joke they deserve. You know
yes,
what I mean?
It is.
And
it
so
is.
You delivered it, and I appreciate you very much.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, do you – how – if you were a Republican, Connor, and you wanted to sell voting for this, what would you say? I know. Sorry.
To me, it just seems so, it's something that affects everyone. So I don't understand why being bipartisan on specifically this issue is against your party in any way, because it directly affects. I just don't understand how we got to this point where nothing can be bipartisan or nothing can be agreed upon, and then you are completely ostracized from your group for just purely agreeing. It's
extremely mean, girls. It's extremely just taking your ball and going home. And I don't know. You know, for a long time, people have said politics is like wrestling, but this is like this is like a disagreement between someone who tailgates at a college football game but never went to the college and someone who is actually playing in the game. So the tailgaters are just furious that their team isn't winning. But it's like, you don't even go here. Like, you're not doing anything. You right. literally only show up to jeer at the other team and never to actually do anything. So that the way it's wild that it appears that Republicans, their whole plan is to just say we're not doing anything because they want us to and we're just not going to. And then the way that they issue punishment is to make it so that the ones who did do something can't do anything. Like it's a complete no one wins here. Yeah.
And it would be remiss if I didn't also point out that members of the Progressive Caucus did not vote for this bill, including AOC. What did you think of that, Connor?
That's interesting to me that someone on our party didn't vote for it, because I'm like, okay, you're a free-thinking individual who didn't want this for a specific reason, just as much as a Republican voted for it.
Right, who's like, a free-thinking individual who wanted it for a specific reason.
Yeah, I'm like, that's way more interesting or makes more sense to me of voting for something because you believe in it or don't believe in it. But for the part of you know, having some sort of consequences for making your decision, that part makes no sense to me at all. Like, they have every right to vote for or against it. But having a consequence for doing one or the other is wild to me.
Yeah, it's wild. I thought the vote against it was silly, it was oddly procedural. It's like, you know, are you in favor of the things that are in the bill? I mean, I think by and large were. They just felt like it didn't go in far enough. And then they also felt like it should have been coming in tandem with the Build Back Better bill. And there was just like a weird procedural thing that I think is ultimately going to be difficult to explain to constituents when they're like, so you didn't want to rebuild that bridge or what? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You voted again. Like, did you just not want to rebuild it? Like, can you explain that to me? And then to be like, but it should have been with this other bill. Like, maybe your principles or something there, but I don't think that was like made sense. I don't think that made sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm excited for these expenditures and just to walk into these new playgrounds and bridges and feel that new playground feeling, guys. I'm telling you, if you haven't experienced it, you will, and it's going to be fun. All right. This is me doing just straight up propaganda for the infrastructure bill. No, but it's like we also need to we need to applaud functioning government and be excited about the things that it can do to the tune of over $1 trillion. There are things that it can do, you know what I mean, for us, right? I don't know. So I do feel like it needs some of that. We're only doing optimism here on Fake the Nation. Okay. We're going to move on to the next topic. But before we do, I want to thank people who have been leaving these 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. You guys, I'm so heartened by this. A. Moonchin G gave us 5 stars, said, dedicated to Nagin, smiley face emoji, heart headphone emoji, and this one's critical, bell emoji, because for those of people who know the show, they know the bell, something that Taco Bell has and Fake the Nation has, a very critical bell. Grand Duchy gave us 5 stars and said, appointment listening, OMG Nagin, I very much identify with the conversation regarding scheduling time with friends. It was like a pod we had some while back. I love the podcast. I make sure to listen every week because I love the content and topics. Thanks so much. 5 stars. Oh, that's such a wonderful review. Thank you. And please keep the reviews coming because it really, really helps people find the show. It is a part of the algorithm game that everybody is playing up in this internet. Connor is vigorously nodding his head because he knows about that algorithm game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, grizzled from Connor. Okay, so now let us move into topic number 3. So in this segment, we dig into the soft, recycled cotton tote with adjustable straps and interior pocket division that is the cultural grab bag. Today's first item, Britney Spears is free, bitch. The conservatorship is over. It only took several years. Connor, what did you make of this news?
Thank God. I'm glad it actually happened and it wasn't like the infrastructure deal and it took decades and decades and decades. You know, like it was actually refreshing to see action finally being taken and then it you know, justice being served relatively quickly from the moment that it really hit mainstream media. So yeah, I was just really happy for her.
Yeah, me too. Shalewa, what'd you think?
I mean, okay. We did it, right? We did it. We got it done, and I am thrilled for her, and I want us all to keep an eye on her because she's been through a very traumatic experience, one that I don't even think we fully understand because this is kind of our first time really learning about conservatorships and things like that. And so I want us to keep an eye on her. I want her to get the kind of help that she needs beyond like, here are your car keys and here's your ATM, you know. I want her to also like really like deal with the, I mean, this was family that did that to her.
Yeah.
So I not that I am a worrywart, but I am a worrywart. So I just want her to get the full amount of help. And also, and I don't know if this is a deep cut for anyone who's a hardcore Britney person, because I'm not a hardcore Britney person. So I don't know if this is controversial to say this or not. But where's Felicia? Bring Felicia back. Felicia was like her right hand man when she was young and out there and her parents couldn't be with her all the time.
She was in the documentary.
She was in the documentary and was just kind of like, so sweet. And when I saw her before she started speaking in the doc, I was like, there's Felicia. Because I remember seeing her on like MTV right next to Britney and like the Diary of or whatever. And I'm like, bring Felicia back. Felicia is going to keep an eye on her.
Yeah. And make sure she's fed. I like that. I agree. So #bring Felicia back.
Yeah. I just want a nice handler for her.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about her. And I just watched the documentary and just, we vaguely talked about this in the broader context of conservatorships. And I wonder, do we just need to make a documentary about every man, woman, and child who is in an abusive conservatorship relationship in order for their conservatorships to be addressed? So
we might be moving in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, it is great that like this thing opened it up for this conservatorship thing that on the average American knows nothing about, right? I didn't know anything about it until this documentary, until the Free Britney movement or whatever. Also, last thing about this, I just Googled what is her net worth. And apparently, I mean, according to the internet, did you Google it? It's $60 million. And
it should be so much more.
So much more.
It feels like that was a mishandling of her net worth by the conservatorship, which sucks. Not that, look, hey, $60 million, great. You're good. You're fine. But I just was like, Britney Spears, world famous Britney Spears, that doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? It
Not
should be
all.
Much more. Okay. Now let us move on to the next piece in the cultural grab bag. We read a piece in the New York Times called The Art of Botox, and it made the case that our acceptance of Botox has like evolved. We used to sort of think of Botox as like this gaudy thing happening to the waxen faces of mid-aughties Real Housewives, right? But now we're sort of looking at it as like, oh, look at that flat, immovable forehead. You know, that woman got work done. She's so empowered. Do you feel like Botox has had an evolution, you know, in how it's perceived? Shalewa?
Not in this house. No, sir. No, ma'am. Mm-mm. Not me. Not with me. I mean, not that I thought anyone who got it done was a freak. But my problem is I now can't tell how old anyone is.
Because if
you're younger and you get it, you look like an older person trying to look younger.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, I have no idea who you are.
That's
and that,
true.
And so
when
it's just
the young
complete,
ladies get it at like 25.
You suddenly look 60 to me.
Weirdly older.
Yeah.
That's so true.
So
I
can't figure it out. And I certainly... Like, it is something, I'm at an age where I, apparently, by these new rules, should have been thinking about this 20 years ago. And I'm like, well, it's too late now. I got lines. What are you going to do? But I don't know. I guess it is a type of, like, evolution, solidarity sister, and all of that. But it still, to me... makes everyone look the same. And now I can't tell any of the new girls, quote unquote, pop girls, pop singers, rappers. Like there's a huge female rapper, like just, there's just so many of them. And I honestly can't tell them apart because of the work is the same as there's just a face apparently that we've all agreed upon. And now I can't tell them apart. And I mean, do what you want, you know, on a feminist tip, but give me a sign, wear a name tag. I can't tell who you are.
Well, okay. So Connor, the article made this claim that the internet has conscripted us into the construction and manipulation of our own images. So that the idea of wearing some kind of mask, whether through plastic surgery, Instagram filters, online avatar, cloak of irony, no longer reads as unnatural, but rather as broadly relatable. What did you make of that claim in the piece?
I love this topic. I find it so thoroughly interesting because I think that there are so many things at play here with, you know, like the recent rise of the body positivity movement and, you know, taking... control of yourself, whether it is that you want to stay the same, whether you want to change, no matter what it is, you know, it's up to you. And people are supporting that and uplifting that. And if you don't, witch hunt, down with you. And I think that met with the plastic surgery, I'll call it a, you know, maybe a trend, or I'll call it like a rising trend where people are starting to get plastic surgery. So now it met with the body positivity movement of that it's no longer okay to shame someone for getting plastic surgery, or it's no longer, I should say, the norm to do so, to call it out. It's just, it's you taking power over your body and making a decision, and that's great. So it's an interesting kind of cultural phenomena that now they're all pairing together. But where I start to find issue with all of it is exactly what we were just talking about, in that at a certain point, you're almost more so uplifting people for changing themselves and trying to meet a societal standard or a new societal standard to the point where they may not even realize they're only doing it, they're only participating in these trends or these surgeries because they don't even realize that they're trying to look like something that they've seen online.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's this strange
it's
world.
It's so strange. Exactly.
In.
It's like, yeah, you go, girl, female, you know, empowerment, do what you got to do. And underneath that is, and the thing you got to do is have this specific beauty standard. So it's like, I get it. I get all of it. I get the pressure. I get, you know, I'm in show business. I totally fucking get it.
Totally.
I also, you know, and then I also get body positivity is both about being okay with however someone looks, but then also being totally okay that someone is trying to completely change themselves to look a specific. It's very weird. And we haven't come to the other side of it. Like, we haven't settled on what is makes like ethical sense around this. I don't feel that we have. And then you look at someone like Frances McDormand, and she's just like heralded for having done nothing. But then you wonder, would the industry sustain more than one Frances McDormand? Mm-hmm. Because I don't, all the A-list celebrities who get a ton of stuff done, they talked about Nicole Kidman a bunch in this article. I don't know if they would let Nicole Kidman do a bunch of jobs if she didn't look, you know, perfect.
And
I
that
don't know.
Is actually kind of fascinating to me, because I feel like this is really the first time that we're seeing like feedback on Nicole Kidman's work done. And she's been getting work done for a while, and she's been acting that whole time. And so I feel like her roles are now just women with a very
icy
women. And I watched a movie of hers from the 90s recently. My roommate came through and was like, "Who is that?" And I'm like, "That's Nicole Kidman." And he's like, he was captivated. He was like, "She's just so animated." And I'm like, "Yeah.
It's like she's been frozen by a toxic material.
That's what's underneath there." And I know she's a great actress. She's one of my favorites. But it's also, I feel like this is the first time that we, and it may be because she's playing someone that society has decided has always been wacky, therefore needs to have more movement in her face. And like we already had another a standard that all the various standards that we have outside of just like perfection, there is also like, oh, if you're a woman who does comedy, yeah, you need to look something of a mess. Because
right.
Why like else you, would you do this?
You have to like look great, but a little
also
bad.
A little bad. Yeah.
Right. And that's, I think, you know, there, because you see that in comedy, right? We're like, oh, like, I don't, you know, whoever famous comedian, playing, you know, doing a lead of a rom-com is like, she's, you know, obviously beautiful, but like with a little something that's wrong. And like, that is I think strategically maintained. And it's so weird, but I guess maybe as comedians, like, it gives me a little bit of room or something.
Right.
Like hey
yeah,
guys, I'm going to keep this nose because it's my one, you know, weird thing. And so
I hate how this has been placed too, all on women, and I hate how this has been, you know, there's this whole this now new standard of like, oh, they're aging so well. Look how well they're aging, as if that means absolutely anything. Like, what does it mean to age well? Also, what's the harm in looking like you're aging? We are aging. Newsflash, we're all decaying right now.
I would love to hear Nicole Kidman's knees when she gets up in the morning. Like, you can't, no matter how much work she's getting done, you can't tell me that she doesn't make a little noise every time she sits down and stands up. Just,
oh,
ugh,
of course.
Ugh.
And
she
not
has
to pick on Nicole Kidman, because every one of these ladies has done all of these things. It's just the article really fixated on her. But yes.
And it's funny, too, that it's all fixating on women because all the Hollywood men have had it done, too.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many of them that have had it done. But, of course, totally. It's so subtle. And I'm like, why are we praising the subtlety of it, too?
Really... I know. Then just don't do it. Like, yeah. You know? Yeah.
I think, actually, that's what seeing this rise of Botox has helped me do is identify it in faces that I wouldn't have been looking for it before. But now I can look at it, and it's mostly men. I can look at men and go, like Jeff Bezos got a little fresh up before he went close to space. he totally Botoxed his whole face out. And I was like, no one's going to see you, bruh. Like, you're in space. But, you know, you want to come back with a fresh face.
Well, the last little piece of news in the cultural grab bag is that Sesame Street has been on for more than 50 years, and now for the first time it's introducing an Asian American Muppet. Ji Young is a guitar playing Korean American character who's going to bring rock music into the conversation, conversation about race, and just she'll be fun. I was actually surprised that they didn't already have an Asian American Muppet. I also was like, then thinking, because I watched Sesame Street with my little girl, and I looking at these characters, I'm like, oh, I didn't even really, I'm sort of like not thinking about race when I'm looking at them. So what did you think when you heard the news?
I thought the same thing, where I was like, oh, like, I guess about time, or like, wow, yeah. Praise them for doing nothing in a way, because it's like it should have been done. But then I thought the same thing, where I'm like, wait, but they're Muppets. They're not humans. Why am I what?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I was just like, oh, I mean, this is great, but also, were they like heavily race-based before?
Yeah, what race is Cookie Monster and Big Bird?
Yeah, like, I don't know. I just was like just a little... but again, I think it's great, and it's a wonderful show, and I support it. And like I said, my kid watches it. So, Shalewa, what would you think?
Well, you know me, I'm branded. You know I got the Sesame Street tattoo. So, here's what I do. I have a Sesame Street tattoo of the street sign.
So, let's hear it.
I think the reason that it wasn't necessarily a concern early on is because of the way the show was set up. So the show was kind of set up, I believe, with the thinking of we're going to speak to kids in like black neighborhoods, kind of, right? Kids who live on a stoop. But for all the other kids who are watching across the country, we will have video, you know, little video clips of what
Other they go around things the country.
Like. So the show has changed a lot in how they put it together since then. But early on, when they were like developing
it, was
Muppets,
very urban show.
It was an urban show, but they also weren't necessarily thinking of races because they had like a bunch of clips of everything that they could show you
around the country.
So
which they
like,
still do.
We didn't
they
have
show
to,
you.
Yeah, which they
the
do. Yeah. So I don't think their mindset 20 or 30 years ago was, we need an Asian Muppet. I think it was like, oh, we've got these clips of a Korean family doing this or a Chinese family doing this.
Yeah, because there's been, and also one of the main human actor people on the show is Asian American, or one that I've seen on many episodes. Is a long-time actor on the show is Asian American. And so that's all, you know, it's like it's not like we haven't seen, Asian people on the show. But that said, I obviously think this is great. I also think, you know, like my kid is a black Iranian Muslim. And there's, you have to get real granular to represent everyone. And you're not going to. Like my kid has to wait her turn for many years for that kind of character to appear. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to me that, like, she's going to see a bunch of other diverse characters. Like, I was kind of thinking about my own childhood. Like, I grew up watching a lot of, like, black sitcoms. You know, Cosby Show, I know, whatever, problematic now. But A Different World was one of my favorites. And I think I really gravitated towards those shows because it wasn't that I needed to see an Iranian on screen, although that's obviously awesome and I would love to see more of those. Hey, I'm available. But I needed to, it was just good to see other minorities, like the minority experience represented by this one big minority group. You know what I mean? So I I think this is awesome. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I think they didn't start. I blame it on the age of Elmo. I think they didn't start like thinking of things where they're labeling like we need to have an autistic Muppet. All of that seemed to happen over the past like 15 years. I mean, just last year there was a whole thing about a new Muppet, like a little black boy Muppet with his dad. And I can't even remember what the deal was, that maybe it was a single father or something like that. And I was just like, yeah, but I mean, like, remember, you know, 20 years ago you put out the video of the girl black Muppet singing about her hair. And it's like, I'm like, y'all been doing this. Like, I don't know why, in a weird way, I feel like they're like, okay, now we have a checklist. Like, I feel like they need to adhere to a checklist because people are saying we're not being seen. And I don't know if it's going to work, if they, you know, they will have to get more and more granular. But then again, they got Sesame Streets all over the world. So
right, like exactly, yeah. So yeah, it's not,
like
yeah,
maybe we just got to go there or something.
Yeah, totally. So, but I don't mean to criticize anybody. I think this is fantastic. Obviously.
Yeah, I think it's great. It is great. But I also was just kind of like, so this one is labeled as such so that there's no confusion.
There's a right, yeah,
I
yeah.
guess. Connor, I can only assume that's
what
why.
What were you gonna say in the wake of like me sounding like a heinous meanie? Like, critic? I'm not. I like totally think it's awesome. But Connor, save the segment and close it off for us.
No, that's exactly what I was gonna say. I'm like at the end of the day, it's fantastic. You know, representation is deeply important, especially in media for younger people where they weren't even like, you know, maybe they weren't even necessarily consciously looking for it, but to have it there from the very beginning, I think can really, you know, do wonders for a young mind. But then I was also going to say, like, who am I to talk? I'm a white cis male. I've seen myself in every mirror around the world. so I'm good. Let's pass the baton.
Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. Okay, folks, tell me what you think about any of these topics from the cultural grab bag. Shalewa, Connor, that is the end of the show. I am so happy that you were here with me today. This was so fun, and I would love for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to find all of the stuff that you do. Shalewa, where do they do that?
I'm on pretty much all of the social medias, the important ones anyway, at Silky Jumbo, all one word, traditional spelling. And
What is your handle on Parler? Well, that's what everybody wants to know.
It's Silky Jumbo with a zero.
Connor, where do they find you?
I am also on all the social media platforms at Connor Franta, NNOR, the right way to spell it. Ding. And you can pre-order my new book at ConnorFrantaBooks.com. Go pick up a copy anywhere books are sold.
And let's not forget to remind them about your album, Shalewa. I forgot to force you to tell
everyone about my album. I've got a couple of albums. I have one called Stay Eating Cookies, and I have one called So You Just Out Here. And if you are in the New York area, keep your eyes peeled. I have a solo show called Don't Reach in the Bag that I'm doing all over the place whenever I can.
Oh my gosh, so busy. Both of you are so remarkable. And as for me, you all know where to find me on all of the social medias that we should be avoiding. But please also think about supporting the show at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. You can support the show for as little as $1, but for as little as $4, which if you think about it is just 1 times 4, you'll get bonus episodes of the show. And this week we just posted a bonus episode with a list of ways that adults waste money. It turns out I do all of those ways. But we also figured out that the list may say more about the list maker and how he may not have any joy in life. I'm not sure. You tell me what you think by going to patreon.com/NikkiFarsad and subscribing to the Patreon and supporting the show. Thanks so much for people who keep posting to Apple Podcasts. Keep them coming. As I mentioned, I'm also going to be on the Doughboys podcast this week, which is another HeadGum pod. So check out Doughboys. It's a really fun podcast, and we review the restaurant Capital Grill, and it was a time, I'm telling you. But what I would really like to do is thank all the people that make our show a possibility. That is our wonderful producer, Danielle Jones-Wesley, our fantastic audio engineer, Stephanie Aguilar, everyone at HeadGum who makes this show possible. Our theme music was written by Gabi Alter, and you can email us at faiththenation@headgum.com. If you have any ideas for segments or panelists or any ideas at all, you can. You can, again, join the Patreon for bonus content, and we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.